And we are recording.
Hot mics! Get your hot mics for the hot mics!
Wow. Well, that was...
We got three hot mics now.
I have never seen that many lights on the mixer before. Yeah, that's a new goal.
You're welcome, Zach.
Challenge accepted.
Man, so as if that wasn't enough to get excited about right there, I'm excited for another reason.
Yeah, who's this old hat we got with us?
I look much older now, don't I? Oh, man.
It looks like you've been entrepreneuring like, for a little
bit. Why didn't y'all
bit.
Tell me this?
So who is this over there giving us an update or about to give us an update?
Rick McCluskey.
Welcome back, Rick.
Yeah.
Rick McCluskey.
You should have done a before and after pick, like the first episode.
as we
were just getting started.
You're all bright and shiny and so excited.
Now I haven't had a haircut in 3 months. And I hitchhiked on the way here.
You know, that's why Caleb,
I saw the new vehicle. Looks good.
Heck yeah, yeah. And the thing is Caleb and I were talking about, much to both of our surprise, this project has been going long enough now to where we can actually have some updates.
Sure.
And we knew you would be a great guy for an update. All right.
By the way, so just before we get into it, just the things that I've observed, me being an artsy guy and branding marketing, I love the concept that I've seen, the TikTok, the social media presence, all of that stuff. Well done. Keep it up.
Yeah, that is a media content in general.
Yeah, my it's a beast, isn't it?
Gosh, it's overwhelming.
Yeah,
it's like you can't do enough.
You can't. No,
and for
and they
me,
say you really need to be doing about at least 6 to 8 a day.
Yeah, just to have them in the chamber.
Harmozy puts out 250 a week, I think, when he started
across a bunch of different channels.
Across, but still, I mean, it's
a lot.
Yeah, it's a beast.
I often find myself wondering at what point do you start annoying people though when you're putting out that much.
Yeah,
you
know? I mean, I don't know.
I think right at the point we're at, it's about getting the algorithm to notice that hey, we're consistent, and then after that we'll probably pull back a little.
Yeah,
because I'm telling you, I don't like doing it.
Yeah,
it's just one more thing.
It's
on
like
the list,
a necessary huh? evil type of a deal.
Yeah, and I have to. I'm not doing what I know I'm supposed to. Like, supposedly now in 2025, they like the personal, your face talking to the camera.
You're going to have
not
to get
professionally
used to that.
Edited.
You really got to get used to doing that. And I mean, I think, you know, it takes some time.
And you
it's
would
not
think
like I'm there.
A person as good looking as I am.
That's true.
That it would be easy. My wife was going to throw up when she hears it.
When I was driving up here, I was thinking, okay, what's going to be the best way to set this one up? And I think probably the best way is that first time we had you behind the mic, which was a lot of fun, we got to learn a lot about you. Yeah. And you teased about what you were working on about a year ago, whenever it was you were with us. So now, if you don't mind, walk us through it like chronologically. So what... And Rick, that means time-based.
Yeah. Since you were here last, that's what that means.
Yeah. So tell us what you've been up to once that interview was over.
Oh, man. It seems like it was 5 years ago.
It does.
I guess in entrepreneur years, it was.
Yeah.
I guess it wasn't long after that. Matter of fact, it was just days after that. I was sitting on my back porch and just got off a phone call where there was a lot about to take place as far as some purchase orders and some work's about to happen. And for the first time in a long time, I felt my chest getting tight. Mm-hmm. I felt the anxiety. And, you know, we always talk about anxiety that entrepreneurs have, but you got that almost fear of success, but, you know, your opportunity at success comes with that fear of failure. So, of course, I go inside and I'm talking to my wife, and she's like, you need to make sure you're ready for all this. And I cried uncle for the first time. And I called Chris Spence, and I was like, hey, buddy, are you just doing podcasting, or are you still consulting? Because I need some consulting right now. And, you know, to his credit, Chris drove up. I got, 72 hours later, you and I were sitting on our back on my back porch, and he had that Chris Spence big boy talk with me, like, hey, if I'm going to have anything to do with this, I got to make sure you're serious. And I was like, hey, whatever we need to do. And that started a really long journey of him plugging and playing some people from his network. And for me to have to put on the big boy pants and try to run a legitimate business. And, you know, we had blind spots in the road that, you know, just being new to the industry, I wasn't prepared for. And then there were some... other lessons learned along the way. So I guess first thing was we went into branding.
And branding for what? Because for our listeners that haven't heard, the first time you're behind the microphone, which company are you talking about?
Oh, yeah. So it's a company called Fly By Shine, and we use these really big drones that pressure wash and soft wash commercial buildings, industrial above ground storage tanks, manufacturing facilities, things of that nature. And we also do window cleaning. So we set out to try and to lock down a piece of the market. And in my eyes, what I saw both on the exterior cleaning side of things, specifically on the drone exterior cleaning, is there's no brand. I mean, you look at... some of the brands we've talked about in the past, you know, there's no Stanley steamer. There's no Orkin. And to me, it's like it's a service that everybody uses. I mean, the 14-year-old down your street, you know, comes and pressure washes your driveway. And I saw an opportunity. I mean, the margins are great. And so I guess with that, I also felt like I was out of my element. I've never had any intention to grow a brand, but also it was a little bit of insecurity that I think I had from past business ventures to where I believe I cut corners. And yeah, I did have a couple of exits that were good, you know, put my family in a good position, but it was like, you haven't proven yourself to be a real businessman. You know, you haven't had to deal with employees. You haven't had to deal with an expansion. And something that can be very capital intensive. And, you know, once again, credit to Chris holding my feet to the fire, saying, hey, if you want this vision to come alive, there's no way to cut corners and make it happen. And I think another hard conversation we had is when he told me the money amount that it would take to grow a brand like that, just for the Southeast. I felt my chest get tight. So anyhow, we went into branding. Great company that we work with, Bread.
Yeah, Chris, shout out Bread.
Yeah, Chris. Shout out Bread. Chris hooked us up with them, and you're talking about a journey. It is so much deeper than a logo, so much deeper. I mean, it's, you know, at a molecular level, who and what you are as a company. And, you know, we were just talking about content, and I look at our content, and I'm like, gosh, are we really hitting our brand? Like, are we really telling that story? Because right now, I'm just like, with every extra minute that I have, I'm like, I'm going to put something together real quick just to get it, you know, into a platform. And I guess that'll go into the bigger lesson learned when we, further down the road of this interview, is, you know, trying to wear all the hats. Mm-hmm. And man, that is probably the worst mistake that a person can make. And we're just now getting, I feel like I'm getting out of that. But it was branding. We racked up a nice little bill. And then we went into the first winter, which for this industry, it can be rough. The mm-hmm. Mississippi, you know, I'm like, hey, we ain't got long.
But plus two, this is right when you were starting out.
Exactly.
Too, and spent a bunch of money.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for reminding me. Yeah. we were bringing in great money. And the winter was, it was a little bit worse than what a typical Mississippi winter was, I believe. But there were things that I didn't take into account, how drone batteries really don't like cold weather. Mm. So I think it was the first job we had where it was sub, 35 degrees, and I'm sitting here watching our batteries just drop like flies. And come to find out, a lot of them, most of them, they weren't destroyed. You know, I just had to rehab them. And so that started my journey on finding, learning something different in this business. But the other thing that happened is, I had plans of building out a couple more rigs during that time. And I didn't winterize the existing rigs the way they were supposed to be winterized. I was thinking to myself, it's a Mississippi winter, can't be that bad. Well, it can. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it just pays to listen to the old heads in the game and do what they say. So this is where that arrogance that is, I wouldn't say arrogance, confidence that a lot of new business owners and entrepreneurs have, it may bite you.
Well, it's like there's a confidence, but then there's this naive confidence that just not knowing.
Very much so. And we made it through that. At the same time, I had bought a new rig for myself, was trying to put that together. So there was a lot going on. And then we tried to figure out, I talked to Chris, what's the best way of expansion here? Because we got to build a brand. We eventually have to talk about new locations. And, is it best to do this organically? Is it best to, use a franchise model? And I think that I come to the realization that organically was going to be almost impossible if we were going to meet the time goals that I had. Mm-hmm. Because in my eyes, I feel there, in just a few years, this is going to be more commonplace. So I had to, had to rush. But I think that's also something that every entrepreneur feels like, that, they're running against time.
Mm-hmm. So, and when you said more commonplace, are you talking about drones doing cleaning or drones doing everything?
I think drones and robots doing more and more. Mm. Just with the advancements in artificial intelligence and robotics in general, that, we're going to see a lot of these more dangerous jobs be addressed by robots and technology. But drones in general, that was my concern, that there would be more coming. And I knew that the one thing that could set us apart is the brand. Nobody's really branding, and they're kind of still not, and I would like to say that we are. So I said the word franchise, and Chris said, we probably need to talk to some people because you need to find out some things. So we went to our law firm, Butler Snow, I would say the top law firm in the state, had a very eye-opening conversation about what a franchise means. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, you could just say, hey, I have this brand and this way of doing business. Do you want to do it too? And that was it. But evidently, this is kind of treated like a security. Mm-hmm. That and it makes sense that you're asking
You're having to share data. And,
sure.
Yeah.
And, you're asking someone to invest what, will eventually be a large sum of money into this idea that you have, but also a system. And I think that was the most important thing, the most important takeaway I had from the conversations with Butler Snow. And we decided that there was a way to kind of dip our toe in the water.
Mm-hmm.
It had to be very calculated. We couldn't come off smelling, talking, sounding like a franchise, because we could get ourselves in a lot of trouble. So we decided on, let's play this really close to the vest. We could test run a franchise model with a couple licensee locations. Yeah, it probably wouldn't have the entire effect of a franchise, but it would be as close as we could get without having to spend a lot of money.
And you can build your systems as you go and record some data.
Yeah, stress test this, you know, what we think is a system. Mm-hmm. And in our case, kind of create a system. I mean, we kind of had an idea of how we wanted it to look. So we started with the Mississippi Gulf Coast and Louisiana. And we're just now getting to the point where we're doing jobs with them, trying to train them. We now are better on the cash flow side after those pretty big initial investments at a, you know, I think every time Chris called me, he thought he was probably talking me off a ledge. And he had to keep on reminding me, hey man, look, a lot of these calls are not going to be repeating.
Mm-hmm.
Like, these are just things that you had to do in order to, you know, mm-hmm. get ready for success.
Mm-hmm.
So we came out of that, and now I'm really looking forward to the next part of this, which is what I consider the cool stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But there was just so many other lessons learned along the way that, you know, we can discuss about who you hire, mm-hmm. About assumptions that you make as far as people just understanding things about the systems that we use. It's not always like that.
Mm-hmm.
And my goodness, labor. Yeah. Why didn't you tell me about that, Caleb?
I mean, on the
that
topic.
That one will get you.
On the topic of who you hire, so you brought up that you have a licensee relationship with folks.
Sure.
So obviously that's not a W-2 relationship.
Right.
We've had a variety of people talk in the past of how can I expand my company? Should I do it organically with more W-2 folks? Should I contract out? Should I franchise? Should I license, et cetera? What would you say, you know, now that you got a little bit of hindsight, are some of the lessons learned, good and bad, about going down the licensee road versus the other options?
The good is the way that we went about it is looking for licensees who are entrepreneurial, who have had experience in business. And in my eyes, you know, they take the labor burden and now they're dealing with that versus us having to deal with a labor burden, not only in our, you know, central location or our home base, and then trying to figure out, you know, a labor market that's in another region, another area. Because I think if you talk to most business owners right now, they're having a hard time figuring out, you know, in their backyard. So how in the world am I going to go to another state and all of a sudden know what's going on? I think we did the right thing, but we just had to, it was a brace for impact, because I mean right now we're still learning new things.
Mm-hmm.
And I heard something very good a couple days ago on a podcast. It was people are gonna disappoint you, people that you bring on. And the people that are there with you in the end, you need to be prepared that there may not be one of them that was there with you in the beginning. And I think that's a mistake that it's a rookie mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make. I mean, you look at buddies and, you know, people that you enjoy being around, and you're like, man, you'd be great for this. And you just need to understand that's not always the case. Mm-hmm. You know, we've had people that, gosh, we may have met in the last 2 weeks that are just turning out to be amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And then you may have somebody that's, you know, you've known for 10 years and they're just not cut out. But I would say, as the business owner, you know, stick to those convictions.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tough. I mean, when you introduce that personal dynamic into the business world, you don't know which one's supposed to be pulling on the other.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or you do you need to stay true to yourself on the friendship side, or stay true to yourself on the business side? And that's incredibly tough. You know, my brother-in-law, he owns 2 or 3 businesses, and he absolutely refuses to hire family or friends.
Yeah.
And I think there's a benefit to that. Mm-hmm. He kind of keeps business, you know, keep the main thing the main thing.
Well, even when everything goes well, it's very common for the company to outgrow the original people.
Sure.
And so you have a situation where the company starting off at 6-figure revenue is a completely different company at 8-figure revenue.
Sure.
And so it would stand to reason, kind of common sense, well, if the company is going to change dramatically, the team probably should too. But, you know, that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah. I mean, even as the founder, you wonder at what point did the company outgrow you?
Oh, yeah. You see that, well, to be honest, Rick, you see that a lot in tech. Like, there's been numerous tech companies where the founder, as the company got bigger and bigger, he ends up or she ends up moving into the CTO role.
Sure.
Because they find that their job just becomes a bunch of desk stuff that they hate, you know, and they enjoy the product. They built the product. That's why the company got to where it was. But now they're having to do business meetings all day, and they hate their life.
Yeah, and you know, I find myself, I mean, you and I probably had this conversation more than myself and anybody else, you know, Chris pushing me like, hey, you can't be on a truck. If you are on a truck and you stay on a truck, you're going to become what you were trying not to become, and that's a chuck on a truck. You're nothing more than just the local wash company. Not that there's anything wrong with that, you know, and
if that's what you want.
And, you know, my fallback is, if all this goes away and I end up being a local guy, I mean, it's still good money.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually, you probably attest to this, being a military guy and an athlete, man, when you work outside, it sucks, but there is something that just feels good. I mean,
at the end of the day.
Yeah, I mean, when things hurt, of course, being 40 years old and doing manual labor, but, man, you feel alive, mm-hmm. especially when you've been doing this corporate stuff for a little bit. But then I have to have that reality check that, you know, if however important I am to the, you know, day-to-day operations and the touch labor, that's how little my company's worth.
Mm-hmm.
Because if all this revolves around me being on a job site or me doing everything, there's no exit in the future. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to buy that.
Mm-hmm.
They're just going to want to hire you.
Yeah, yeah, sure. And so I've made it a point, you know, the goal coming into this year was to start that transition away from that. And I think we lost sight of that for a second because we were – I wouldn't say survival mode. I mean, we were fine.
You had to be kind of hands-on.
But it was clawback mode. Like, all right, I screwed up the winter time. Now we have to claw back into this.
Mm-hmm.
And in the same time, keeping our eyes on, we just signed deals to expand, and we have responsibilities mm-hmm. to these people. So it was tough. I think, by the grace of God, we are we're hanging in there, and now we're seeing the light at the other end of the tunnel. Really, the biggest problem we have right now is to keep up with all the work
mm-hmm.
because it's coming from every direction.
Mm-hmm.
But we have had, like I said, a couple of people to step in, and just out of nowhere, you know, some just by luck, others by me picking up and calling a complete stranger that I was told about. And him being a 19-year-old kid who's been doing this since he was 14, and he's got the – I mean, this guy's got the mentality of a 45-year-old. Mm. And he just steps right in, has no problems whatsoever. He's a unicorn. Because you don't see, I mean, you don't see 30-year-olds work the way he does. So it's been a string of blessings. But, man, you're talking about having to really psych yourself out. Like, you, I've done well on, hey, man, just got to keep going.
And what, Caleb, what's your phrase you say? Get up, make the coffee, sell the coffee?
Yeah, that- I had to try to make it just to keep it simple. When I get freaked out like that, I just got to tell myself, get up, make the coffee, sell the coffee.
Yeah, and see, that is the beautiful thing about at least what we do, is at any point, if I were to seriously freak out, I can go out and manufacture the business. That is the beauty of it. Like, we can go out and find work, and we can make those, you know, cash flow things happen. You know, we can correct course. And if it ever gets that bad, you know, that's what I'll do. We were trying to stay focused on the main objective, but that's something that sometimes I think I take for granted. You know, retail's tough. You know, you're relying on the people to come to you. Marketing is so much more important. You know, with us, I guess I take that for granted. I can go to the customer. I can go find them. I can get in their face. I can bring them stuff. And we can create that business. We can generate the business. And I think that's a beautiful thing about what we have. We have that fallback that we can make things happen to always keep our head above water. But there are the really cool stuff that was going to make our system proprietary and, you know, give us and our, you know, licensees, hopefully future franchisees, an advantage in the marketplace. We're now getting to a point where we can start getting back to that, and to me, that's exciting. That's real cool. As you can see the excitement on my face.
you were talking about that tension of trying to grow a company, but at the same time doing the touch labor. I am 100% confident we have some listeners that can empathize with that, because a phrase that I have heard over and over again over the years is quote, but Chris, nobody can do it as good as I can.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
So just based off that immediate response, what advice do you have for that entrepreneur that's trying to grow the company, but at the same time drives them crazy knowing that no employee can do it as good as they can?
And if I'm talking directly to them, you're probably telling the truth, because I know when I say that to you, and I'll go back once again, you know, Chris is our consultant for the company, and I encourage you, I want you to tell the listener what you see the problems that we do, because I hear people say the very thing that I say and what used to make me cringe, like, come on, dude, you can't do that. You can't be the one doing the touch labor. And here I am. You know, I did fall into that trap. Like I said, I hope we're fixing it. But I would say, yeah, when you say that, you are telling the truth. However, you're also admitting a weakness. You're not training right, or you're not hiring right, or both.
Or maybe just not be trusting.
Well, once again, probably telling the truth. and yeah, that's so very true. And, you know, just little things like when we first had guys come on the job site, you know, I think just from our experience, and this is probably once again my fault, trying to train on the job site is not a good idea, because in my mind, actually Caleb's come and visited me on a couple job sites. In my mind, I'm there for the job and I'm trying to get the job done in a timely manner, because what we do, I mean, time's everything. And it's like, we'll get to the end of the job and I realize I didn't train anybody. All I did was just show them how to be a laborer. And that's an injustice to them and to my company. And, you know, I come from a background where there is training. Like, I have trained people in the past. It's just, man, you get out there and it's a 115-degree heat index, and, you know, yours is like, hey, let's get this done as fast as possible, because the more days I have to spend on the job, that's actually money lost. So I think having those dedicated training days where it's deliberate is probably more beneficial. And then when we go to the job site, we can see that work applied, and then we can, you know, do a after action report and some lessons learned. But it's a choice an entrepreneur has to make. Are you going to be the guy that does it all? And if that's true, just have realistic expectations of where that company ends up. And I think that's the big thing. I've had to have some real intense, honest conversations with myself about, do I want to just keep being the guy that goes out there and gets it? Because you'll make money. There's no doubt about it. But if you're going to do that, why are you spending the money like a company that wants to expand? And that that can get you into a bad situation quick. Because like I said, we went and spent a lot of money on branding, a lot of money on legal fees to get these, you know, other locations set up, a lot of money on, you know, lost time. And so we're doing all the actions of a company that wants to expand. However, the dummy leading the company is out there doing all the work, and not that that I didn't have other people wanting to help do the work, because I did. Probably had people that were trying to beg to help do the work. And you just can't see the forest for the trees. You know, you're thinking in your mind, you know, we just spent all this money on an attorney, or we just spent all this money on our web guys. You know, the quicker I can get this job done, the quicker we can go ahead and get Square again and then start turning over revenue. But man, you just end up shooting yourself in the foot, and it's a vicious, vicious cycle that you can probably see on my face right now. I was such a spry-looking young man when I came in here last time. I, you know, was able to get into the via the handicap ramp coming up here. And
wait, so like, all jokes aside, though, about the handicap ramp, you know, there's another aspect of this that I would imagine you're also having to think through, and it's the fact that your touch labor for your type of work is not easy. And with every passing day, none of us are getting any younger. So does that factor into some of your scaling decisions as well?
Oh, let me shift in this chair for a second. It's hard to breathe with this back brace on. Yeah, that's a good point. So the drones make the job easier. There's no doubt about it. But the way we do it, it's like, it didn't necessarily make the job easier. We just took away more bodies from the job site, so our labor cost was down. And yeah, man, it hurts. I was just telling y'all before we come on the air, I had to go get dry needling done, which I wholeheartedly endorse. It's amazing.
And what is dry needling?
It's like acupuncture with some electricity thrown in there.
Wow.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's great. It was horrible for 3 minutes. I felt extremely uncomfortable. But, you know, it ended up good. I feel good.
So you're a believer in it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I wish I had a car battery here. I'd show y'all how it was.
to get some nails out of the truck.
Yeah. But, yeah, man, you especially when you hit 40, you start to break down. I limp a lot now. My wife can tell you I turn around in the bed. I'm like a rotisserie chicken, trying to get to that right spot to where everything feels comfortable. Had shoulder problems, knee problems, and, you know, the Marine Corps is probably the root of all that, but man, this stuff hadn't helped any. And then you throw in that I'm a 40-year-old father of a 2-year-old and 3-year-old, two little girls, and yeah, that's tough. And that brings up another dynamic. When you're the touch labor guy, and it goes back to that, how you're acting like a company that wants to expand in every regard, except being that force multiplier on the touch labor. Because instead of just one location that you're now having to support, now in all the infinite wisdom that is in this brain housing group that I have, I decided let's add a couple more locations to this. So, I mean, time away from your family. I think to myself, I have to keep revisiting, and Chris does a great job at this. You know, you have to think about what you want to be when you grow up. Think back to the conversations we originally had, and I remember in those conversations, I was like, I'm not going to be an absent father. I refuse to be that. Well, lo and behold, you know, here we are. Daddy's going on week and a half road trips to go do work, or, you know, I had the oldest girl, I mean, she just, you know, is amazed that daddy's at home when she wakes up in the morning. Mm. And so that stuff starts to weigh on you. And really, that was the big reason why I was like, I've got to find someone. And it feels like we've done that, thank God. And I think we're starting to move in the right direction as far as our other locations are concerned. Like another one of y'all's previous guests, Stan White, is one of our licensees and is turning the curb. Stan doing their first solo job this weekend.
Shout out, Stan. Yeah, go ahead.
Buddy. Shout out, Stan. Yeah. White, not Smith.
Yeah. he's more than blueberry lattes. Check him out. All right.
Yeah, so I'm extremely proud of those guys. I mean, I have respect for guys that that's kind of me tooting my own horn. What am I talking about? Caleb's like this too. Guys that may not know what they're doing, but they'll jump right in. I mean, you got to. You don't have another choice. I think that comes from the military.
Got
to
eat.
I mean, you got. You don't have. Yeah.
Got to
eat. When you spend money, especially when you're someone like me, you know, really didn't have any business flying a doggone drone. I've never flown a drone in my life. When you tell your wife, "Look, I got this. Look, buddy, you better have
watch
it.
This.
Yeah, you better have it. You're gonna have to figure it out." But yeah, it's been good. I mean,
imagine how hard it is being our spouse.
Oh God,
man, I'm so glad you brought that up, because here's the thing: like these follow up interviews, they don't really help unless we ask the real questions.
Sure.
So
y'all want me to get her on the phone?
I love that. I love the fact Caleb brought that up, because in all honesty, man, we've talked about this a year ago, the first time you were on. It requires not just the entrepreneur; it requires the entrepreneur's family, because because it touches everybody. It involves everybody, whether they want to be involved or not. So as much as you're comfortable sharing, you mind speaking to the family side of trying to grow something like this?
She is incredible at being selfless. So right now she's at home with two very incredibly rambunctious little girls, and they had to have gotten that from their mama. As y'all can tell, I'm pretty even-keel and level. You know, I like to stay calm. Yeah. So, I'm certain there are times that she thinks, well, I didn't sign up for that, you know. And if she were to say that to me, I have to respect that to, you know, a certain degree. And sometimes I think, man, I didn't sign up for this. You have to really have some hard conversations. I'm telling you, man, so the what do they call it? The inner reflection that you have to have. You have to not only think about what your desire is for your business and what it's like when it grows up, but also what's your desire for your kids and what do you want them to be like when they grow up, you know? And I've been justifying that through most of this, that I'm putting in this time right now, and I'm still young enough where I can fight the fatigue. So if I get home from a long day of work, or a you know, week long trip, I can fight through it and spend that extra little bit with the girls and try to be a dad that's got a little bit of energy, not just be a dad that comes home and falls asleep. But I have to think about that the older they get, it's going to be even more important that I'm there. And also going back to the physical fatigue, I'm going to tell you, there ain't many more years that, you know, I'm going to be able to put in this level of just intense physical labor and be foolish enough to think that it's not going to affect me as a father. That's just silly. But you have to motivate yourself, or at least I am in the time being, like, I'm doing something that is, while uncomfortable and I would say abnormal, I'm doing that so they can have the comfortable lifestyle. Like, not saying I want to just give them everything, but in some regards, I do. I think I talked about this last time. You know, the people talk about insecurity in a negative light. In a lot of ways, it can be. But I think for a lot of entrepreneurs, insecurity is such a great motivator. I mean, I'm not going to say we grew up horribly poor, but, you know, I'm sure that both of my parents would have wanted to provide certain things. And I'm not saying I have certain things in mind that I just want to give them, but I do want to have that comfort knowing that if there's something that is needed, that we're in the best position to, you know, provide that. And I think it's good for them to see Daddy chasing what he has as a dream or a goal. And it's even important if I fail that they get to see that.
Come on.
So.
And not hide that.
Right.
Yeah. Because it ends up creating this skewed narrative of, well, it's not okay for me to fail because Daddy never failed.
Sure. Yeah.
And so there must be something wrong with me now that I have.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, respect on that.
Yeah,
that's
very much.
Yeah, it's a tough one. And right now, you know, they ask me if I'm tired or what was it? One of them asked me about going to the doctor the other day. You know, they're 2 and 3. I kind of play it off a little bit. But as they get older, I do want them to understand, man, dust yourself off. Get back on the horse. Maybe hire somebody to do the touch labor next time. But, hey, lessons learned, you know.
So, Rick, you know, the question I'm going to ask you that I love asking everybody on the podcast, dude, is now you got 1 year plus into all this. What would you say so far is the thing you got the most wrong? Thing that was most under or overestimated?
Being able to do everything, the touch labor. And I mean, we've talked about content, and you have to be honest with yourself. There are going to be other people involved. It's a requirement that other people are going to have to step in. And when that time comes, how do you motivate those people? Is it compensation? If it is compensation, how are you going to pay them? You know, because right now, I mean, you can say it, man, we could afford to hire 2 or 3 more people just from a home office standpoint. Somebody that is coordinating bookkeeping or coordinating incoming calls or media content. I mean, yeah, that would make things a lot better. So I guess it's just the best thing is be flexible, but be honest, because sometimes that flexibility will cause you to be a little dishonest.
Yeah, you're talking about motivating your people. So when it's a heat index, like you said, of 115 outside, and you've already worked a bajillion hours that week, how does Rick still keep motivating Rick?
With me, it's easy. I mean, you know, my wife and kids, I'll go through a brick wall. Also, it's the, you know, I'll go through a brick wall for the business. I've always treated the business like another person, and the business deserves this. The business deserves that. I think the problem you run into, and it makes sense, this is nothing groundbreaking, but it's something that you really have to understand, is most people do not care for your business, your baby, like you do. So I'm out there, and of course I'm willing to kill it and do 6 14-hour days straight in 110-degree heat index. But do you think that some of the touch labor guys are willing to do that?
And you can't blame them because it's not their baby.
Heck no. Yeah. I mean, and I guess that's just the reality of the situation. be flexible, or at least be durable. Sometimes you got to be both. At least you get a great tan from right here on your neck.
To be honest,
to your,
man,
your arms down.
Hank Hill tan.
Yeah. I was thinking you're sporting the shorts and you're still tan from tip to tail. So
yeah, man, it makes you feel so good though. I mean, you feel good. It's good to be outside and sweat and work. But I know that time's coming to an end. Hopefully, you know, in the future, that'll be something that, you know, I choose to do. You know, I want to get out to a job site and see how things are going. But
I mean, Rick, I had a guy in construction. I'd shared this story a long time ago on the podcast, but he was really, really into framing. Like, that was his thing. And the guy was good at it, too. Didn't mind the elements, and he was efficient, fast, the whole nine yards. And the thing is, though, is that as the years were going by, I asked him probably, I don't know, 8 years later, ran into him in town, and I was like, how's your framing business coming along? And he said, oh, it was great. He goes, it's just me. And it just kind of, it knocked me back a little bit, because I was thinking, man, you're 8 years in your framing business, I'm surprised. And I was like, well, if you don't mind me asking, like, why have you decided to keep it just you? And he goes, man, he goes, with this kind of work, he said, and I'll never forget this. He goes, every time I finish a job, I can look back at the house and go, I built that. And so, like, respect in that he can see the fruit of his labor. I get that. That, I mean, don't blame him. On the other side, though, like, when he's 60, how does that work? I mean, do you know any 60-year-old framers, you know, or roofers? And so it's just, I admire the work ethic. I just find myself going, how does that work over the long run?
Yeah, you know, and my dad's been in construction a long time, and I think about that a lot. Like, at 40, it looks like a great tan. But you go see some of these 60-year-olds that are on a construction site right now. They're missing little pieces of their ear and little pieces of their nose. And
fingers.
They had to get that skin cancer cut out.
Yeah.
And, I would – if I'm going to be doing that, I would want it to be a choice. And I will say this, his mental health is probably a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it is certainly a trade-off. If I were to – come to you tomorrow and say, Chris, you know, I think we just want to be this, you know, stay local, because, man, a lot of the money over this past year, I could have kept in my pocket, and that would have been great, and I probably wouldn't be stressed. But then again, you know, what's the opportunity on the other side? So it's hard, and it doesn't mean that, you know, the path that you start out on, you know, maybe in 3 years from now, I'm like, you know, this isn't what I want. And, you know, we'll keep what we have and don't think about expanding anymore, or, you know, just stay where we are in you know, central Mississippi to the Gulf Coast and make the money there, and Rick gets to maintain his sanity. But I don't know. Or the easy thing is just find somebody to run all that.
Caleb had brought up on an episode that we haven't even released yet, you quoted The Office.
Yeah.
And would you mind doing that quote again?
Well, it's the quote that I remember it, I guess, my favorite quote from the show, Andy Bernard, you know, the character Andy Bernard.
Oh, dude, I'm a bigger Office fan than you. I will flex my Office.
So, like, you know, it's his last day, and he's like,
oh, yeah, you never know when you're in the good
times.
You
never know. He's like, is there a way I can know when I'm in the good old days while I'm still in them?
It's such a funny show, but that line, when you hear that line, you're like.
And that's my question for you right now. That's my question for you right now.
Are you in the good old days?
Are you in the good old days right now?
Well, I'll tell you this. I told Stan White, not Smith, the other day on the job site, you know, there were things that was going wrong. And I said, you know, 12, 18 months from now, we'll laugh about this. And it was funny because one of the licensees down in Louisiana, you know, he and I, we had a meeting at his house, and I was sitting there just griping about things. And he looks at me and he goes, Rick, year and a half from now, we'll be laughing about this. And it's not just...
And complaining about something new.
Yeah, it's not just about knowing when you're in the good old days. It's about knowing that this pain is only temporary. And I'm a guy that probably should know that better than anybody. Mm-hmm. I look back to some of the things that we had to do in the military. I look back at bungee jumping for the first time. And it was horrifying. But when you get through it and when it's over, you're like, man, I really want to do that again. There's something really weird about that pain. And entrepreneurs talk about it all the time. You never really hear an entrepreneur story and it goes, you know, without a hitch. You know, there's always, we ran out of runway, or, you know, we were sued, and, you know, I got voted out as the CEO, and there's always those things that happen. And I'm hoping that one day when I'm interviewed on the Forbes list that I get to look back and say, man, I remember, you know, 12 months in, I was on my second interview on the Sippy podcast, and I was talking about all the struggles, but there's also the great things that happened. I mean, we look at the revenue over the first 12 months. It was incredible. It was great. I probably couldn't have pictured it going better. And it does feel good to a degree that really the only hiccups came from my inexperience in this industry.
Because it's experience that you had.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what really...
Because year two is going to... You're going to be prepared for some things. And there'll be new things that you learn, I'm assuming.
Well, to be honest, Caleb, I was thinking about how much you're probably going to be doing training in the year one winter now.
Oh, yeah.
Or the next winter. Because,
yeah, that downtime. You know, hey, this is when we do the training.
Yeah, yeah. I'm anticipating the hurdles that we've had to get over, that they're no longer hurdles anymore. But also bracing for impact for everything else is going to get thrown at us. So,
yeah.
Now, are you a future looking guy? If so, what's in store for the next year for Fly By Sean?
I really want to, I want to see the systems get built out, and I find myself getting right there. But it's like the systems I want to see built out on every rig. I have finally reached something that I can't fake my way through. I got to find somebody that knows how to do this stuff. I mean, I am trying to take a crash course on Raspberry Pi, and it's not the good kind. So if there are any listeners out there that you're familiar with this stuff, reach out to Chris or Caleb, and code word Fly By Sean. Need you ASAP.
Yeah, we can put some feelers out. I know a few guys.
Yeah, no. I mean, I'm very anxious, but I guess the biggest thing is being willing and able to step back a little bit, because I know this stuff doesn't get done. You know, every day I'm on a truck is a day that, or on a job site, is a day that is taken away from that. Mm-hmm. So at the end of year two, if I'm no closer to being, you know, what we wanted me to be, I think, number one, Chris is going to cuss at me, and, you know, he doesn't cuss. And number two, I have to start having some more of those serious conversations. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I think we're going in the right direction. It's exciting. We got some new faces coming on board, some guys that I'm really excited about. They can certainly help us get to where we want to be. So
that's the fun part for me, and that what I like, building the team.
Yeah.
That's the fun part.
And it goes back to, I really should have known this all along, is I think the first interview I talked about kind of how relationships at the end of the day, mm-hmm. you know, if you can't figure something out, find somebody that can. Mm-hmm. And I think that we've got some guys that are going to help out here in the coming months that they've already figured it out, and they expedite things. Mm. You know, they help us get back on track and probably give me the opportunity and the freedom to kind of settle into the role that I was supposed to be in. But, you know, selfishly, and I've told him, man, it's just fun. What we do, while it is physical labor, it's kind of like the framing guy. I mean, it is fun.
Yeah.
But, you know.
And you can quickly see the fruit of your labor, too.
Sure.
I mean, either the building's better off or it's not. It's pretty
yeah, it's so weird, man. It's like while you're doing it, you're just looking at each other like, oh, my God, this sucks. But then you look back at the building as you're wrapping things up, mm-hmm. and you're like, man, that looks good. Good mm-hmm. job, team. Yeah, I'm glad we were happy all day while we were doing this.
Man, I can't hold you hostage all day on your Sunday, but, dude, I there's one more question I got to touch on before we go. With you being a company that uses drones on a daily, weekly basis, would you mind elaborating your thoughts on what you think the future of the industry is going to look like with drones, AI in general? I mean, like, what you have any thoughts on? Is this something that you try to stay on top of with your manufacturer, or can you just speak to some of like where you think the tech is headed?
There are so many conversations that happen if not on a daily basis, at the very least on a bi-weekly basis with many different people. And just in the time period that I was parked right here last time till now, there's no denying what's coming. The only way you can deny it is just by simply saying, I don't know what's coming. And I think that's kind of where we all are. But things that we were saying, oh, man, that would be cool if this was possible in 24 months. In a, you know, 30 days, 60 days, we're seeing that, but then we're seeing the next rendition of it. So I'll tell you how convinced I am. I was telling somebody the other day, you know, my two little girls, when it comes time they're old enough to go to summer camps, we're going to be finding the nearest robotics camp or something that to get into because
breach.
I feel it, to me, it's very naive to say that this AI thing may not catch on because it's already caught on. But instead of trying to fight against it, you know, especially if you're in the workforce, because that dude, I've literally had a website developer tell me that, and this is in the last 6 months, like, oh, this is going to fail miserably. I'm like, where have you been? Like, that is the most ridiculous thing.
He may want it to.
Well, I told him, I was like, if you are telling your customers that, your clients that, I think you're guilty of malpractice.
Mm.
Because I'm just going to say, you're in denial, and there's a great opportunity right now for each and every one of you that's listening, a great opportunity to work with this technology. If you think that it's going to take your job, I think you're refusing to see that if you start embracing it right now, that you will be the person that's looked to kind of harness this for someone, whether it be your employer, whether it be clients or customers of yours. I mean, just from our standpoint, and we're not some, you know, fancy tech firm or something, but my goodness, it's been such a benefit. And for small business, everybody thinks, oh, but it's just helping big corporations. No, I think the people that benefit the most from it is the small business owner, and it helps level the playing field.
And they can probably integrate it in quicker and easier than what the corporation's going to be.
Yes.
And for a fraction of the price, too.
Correct. And I think that's the big surprise that's happening. It's the fraction of the price because I remember coming into this, you know, we had ChatGPT and everything, but you're like, oh, well, this is just the beginning. They're giving us that so to kind of hook us a little bit. And don't get me wrong, there are some expensive, you know, examples of, you know, AI and different programs you can get. But really, if you just dive deep enough or talk to the right person, they'll show you very inexpensive ways, or at least they can prove out a quick ROI. I mean, that I talk about the hours I spend trying to wear many different hats, and it seems like I'm fighting a losing battle. If it weren't for AI, I would have already lost that battle. Like, there's no way I could do this.
One of the best sayings I've heard on this on this topic is that I heard a speaker say, everyone's job may not necessarily be replaced by AI, but their job may be replaced by someone that knows how to use it.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And I think there's a lot of truth to that.
It reminds me of right when I got into the work world and people are just now getting their cell phones, emails becoming the thing. It's the new way of doing business. And there was this older generation that fought it. Mm-hmm. And was not going to adapt to it. And unfortunately, they got phased out. And the ones that learned to play the game, got to keep their jobs. And I guess what I'm saying when it comes to this is it's the same thing. You better learn to play the game.
I wouldn't say they got phased out on technology. Maybe from a professional standpoint, from a personal standpoint, you can find them on Facebook. Typing in all caps, screaming into the world.
All caps. Yeah. You know, you talk about taking your daughter to that camp. The crazy thing about it is I feel like we're reaching a point to where we're going to have to take our kids to those kind of camps, not to give them a competitive edge, but to keep them literate.
Yeah.
Because it's just moving so fast now.
Yeah. I think it's going to be pretty important moving forward that if you want your child to, be relevant in the future workplace or to have any type of advantage, that things like that are going to matter. Because I talking about big corporations not being flexible, I mean, I think it's safe to say our public school system won't be able to either. Yeah. So it's really going to be on the parents to see the benefit in all of this and to push. I mean, that's another thing. Well, what is this going to do to our education system? Right,
to talk about the ethics of it, to talk about how is it that we use it. If we, mm-hmm. If we just say that every tool is bad, then you're just going to get left behind. And
there's always a negative way to look at everything.
Well, tools can be used negatively. I mean, there's definitely some things that we've got to talk about and think about with it, but. There's redeemable qualities, I believe, in every tool that God has given man to create. Something that's redeemable to help human flourishing. So, I mean, essentially, that's what we've got to ask all of our, is fly-by-shine. Is it something that helps humans flourish? And right. Yes.
It's like I was watching a reel earlier before I left the house, and it was the setting was aliens are sitting there watching every advancement in the human species and are like, oh, fire. Oh, that's good. That's really going to help. Oh, they're using it as a weapon. It was like, airplanes. Now they can travel around. Oh, weapon. It's just everything. Oh, weapon. And that is true to a degree. But also think about all the great that it has come of it. I mean, human beings, we have an uncanny ability to make good things bad, but also would create some pretty cool things. So, I mean, the advancements that are on the horizon, the things that we never thought would be possible, now we're like, wow, this is possible.
How long before robots are working at fly-by-shine?
Oh, God, I wish it was tomorrow. Don't think I'm not getting on Alibaba every other day and being like, hey, is there a robot that can do this? Take Rick's touch labor away? Yeah.
Well, I'm going to go ahead and pray for you, Rick. Thank you. Definitely, Father, we just lift up. Thank you. Thank Rick for just how you've made him and what you're doing with him and his company. And we lift up him and all of his team, his wife, his children. Lord, and we lift up all of our listeners that are listening to this and that... We're reminded that your strength is best displayed in human weakness and frailty. And we're just reminded that all of these things that we're doing, that we ultimately, Lord, that we want to do them for your glory. We want humans to flourish, and we just need your help and guidance to show us how to do that. Heavenly Father, thank you so much for loving us. Teach us to love you better. In your holy name we pray, Jesus. Amen. Are you intrigued by today's discussion? Want to hear some more? Great. Stay tuned, because you can listen to any episode of the Sippy Podcast with Chris and Caleb by going to sippypodcast.com. That's sippipodcast.com. Or maybe you'd like to give us some feedback or share some thoughts that piqued your interest during our discussion. If so, that's even better. Send us an email to feedback@sippypodcast.com. Thanks again for tuning in, and have a blessed day.